Welcome back. This is Dr. Barry Holzer.
And Hani Holzer.
And we're here with Parent is a Verb at OUradio.org. Today, we'd like to talk about building a relationship with your child, or better known as...
It's all about the relationship, dummy.
Having a good relationship with your child is not always the simplest thing. Not every child is running to have a relationship with you. Some children by nature are more reserved and harder to pull out. And some children at different stages in life aren't really running to share everything with their parents.
What needs to be created, though, is the relationship, because in terms of ongoing parenting, the reward for the child really is the relationship with you and that special quality that that relationship has for them.
I guess one of the problems parents face is that it's fine when you have a child that comes home every day and wants to tell you everything that happened in school. What do you do with the child who comes home when you say, "How was school today?" Okay.
Well, then you know, we call in the specialist, and that's you know, the root canal person. And that child has to be, you know, you have to reach out to that child more while simultaneously respecting their need for separation and what I'd like to call healthy distance. But you definitely need the root canal specialist for a child like that, because it requires a little special effort, because it's not the natural, easy child relationship.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you really have to make the effort to engage them. You can't just wait for them to come to you.
Absolutely, because they probably won't come.
But I think what's important is that they will appreciate your involvement. It's not that they don't want you to be involved necessarily. It's just not easy for every child to really share that well.
Absolutely. And a lot of kids really need to be taught that it's good to share, it's okay to share, and above and beyond all of that, it is safe to share. Because a lot of kids have learned over time, at least kids that I've seen in clinical settings, that it's not safe to share with their parents, because what they share will be used against them in a court designed by their parents.
One thing is that you want to make it safe, and if you're going to, you know, attack them for what they're going to say, that's not going to make a safe environment. So
right.
I guess the first rule is to keep it safe, okay? We're not going to punish based on what my child shares with me.
We're not going to punish, but it doesn't mean that things won't change based on, you know, what it is that you're telling us.
Right. So if you tell me that when you went out with your friend Saturday night, your friend had a bottle of booze and guys were drinking, that doesn't mean we're going to let you go out with him again this Saturday night.
Right. We're not punishing you. We're protecting you from your own stupidity.
But I guess questions parents run into is, you know, what do you mean having a relationship? How do I have a relationship with my 2-year-old? Or how do I develop a relationship with my teenager? I mean, as a father, you know, with a teenage son, let's say, who doesn't really verbalize that much, or with my teenage daughter, whose interests are very different than mine, maybe.
Right. Well, I think, you know, especially with teenagers, when the door is always closed, meaning their bedroom door is always closed, and they're not inviting you into their world necessarily, it's about knocking on the door and asking for an invitation and an audience with them. And it's also within the family context over time, really creating times for connection.
Creating the time for connection, I think, is very important. So, for example, if everybody sits down together at the dinner table.
Or most everybody. Everyone isn't always available. But if there's some tradition that we get together once a day as a family, let's call that dinner, where most everybody is there, it becomes a place where there's an expectation and there's a constancy and a continuity that we get together every day.
Right. And there's also modeling that the kids who really share more model for the other kids who might have a harder time doing it. And everybody gets a turn to share what's going on and what's going on in their world.
Dinner table is, I mean, the literature certainly, you know, proves it, but the dinner table is a profound opportunity for connection and for expansion of relationship and connection.
And it's very important that kids have that rooting in the family on a daily basis, that connection within the family, as opposed to some families where everybody eats at their own time whenever they come in, or eats in front of the TV or their computer or while doing homework or whatever it is and just grabs a bite. Having the time to sit together, even if it's only 20 minutes, means a lot and really makes a difference. I think beyond that is just spending time, you know, meeting your child where they're at, spending time doing things with kids that they enjoy. With your two-year-old, you know, you might be sitting on the floor playing blocks, and with your teenage son, it might be going outside and throwing a football.
And, I mean, the other thing that I want to interject is that it may not always be pleasurable for you to sit on the floor and play with blocks with a two-year-old. It's, you know, mind-boggling to me how, you know, they just want to build a tower, knock it over again and again. It might be boring as all get out, but that's where they're at.
And so the idea of really actively parenting is really getting involved with them where they're at and doing what's important to them. It's, you know, I know Rosh Yeshiva who've taken their kids to ball games because that's really important to the kid. And so, you know, some of them might be Yankee fans and some may not, but the bottom line is that being with them and developing a relationship and a connection with your child is the most important thing that you can do, especially if you expect your child to continue in the tradition and in the belief system that you have.
Absolutely. And I'd like to get back to the dinner. I'd like to call it the dinner opportunity. How do you create a safe space for people to sit around a table and share their day? Because for it to work, the framework has to be safe. And I think safety engenders that there are no judgments. So whatever you say will be put out there in the stratosphere, but no one is judging it. People actually want to hear it. And that everyone is required, really required, to listen to whoever is speaking, even if it's the three-year-old at the table who's talking about gibberish from school that day. But you may not have to give the three-year-old a 15-minute window of opportunity to spout their gibberish, but that they will get some time, and that the 5-, 6-, 7-, 10-year-old is listening to the three-year-old.
And that everybody shows respect. If I show respect for my three-year-old and show that I understand that this is important to you, it's not gibberish. It may sound like gibberish to your 10-year-old brother, but I understand that this is really important. This is what's going on in your life. This is where things are in your life right now. And they have to learn to respect that as well. And it's the beginning of being learning to respect others, even though they're different.
Right. It's, you know, I think what you're referring to is modeling. What you're modeling for the children is that everyone deserves their respect and attention, and that's really what's required to build the relationship, is lack of judgment and ability to listen.
I think lack of judging. Rather.
Lack of judging.
Good judgment's always good, but judging isn't.
Lack of judging.
I think one of the things you have to do in listening is really listen actively as well. That means asking questions, being involved, showing that it's important to you, showing that you care.
The dinner idea is lovely, but clearly it doesn't necessarily work for every family in the 21st century. So there are other opportunities that I think can be created where you do have time to connect. And the dinner model is nice because everyone is connecting simultaneously. And one thing I've always told my children, and I really mean it, because we do a family dinner, and that was something that I learned from my home that was precious to me and I wanted to perpetuate, was that when I sit down with my kids just about almost every night, it just spouts out of me naturally that, oh, this is the best time of the day. I'm so happy to be sitting here with everybody so that I can hear about everybody's day and we can share. To make it something that it really is important. It really is something pleasurable. It really is something that I am going to look forward to. But, okay, dinner table aside, not working for everybody, what are the other opportunities that you can create for connection? And they're as simple as everyone I know, at least for the most part, has to do errands. So take a child with you on an errand, you know, even if it's to the supermarket or even if it's to pick up the dry cleaning. And those 10 minutes in the car without the radio on, without answering the cell phone, can be precious, amazing, profound, the things that come out, just asking those nice open-ended questions. How was your day? Tell me more. What happened? What happened next?
Right. I think the private time that children can get just because, you know, the third grader comes home before everybody else and therefore can be in the kitchen with mom helping put dinner together for 20 or 30 minutes and have that time where if you're really fully present and interacting and you're really able to meet your child and where they're at, it can make this the highlight of their day and develop a relationship that's going to last and be meaningful for years on.
And a lot of the way that that happens, whether it's, you know, doing dinner prep together or it's doing errands or, you know, again, at the dinner table, is above and beyond showing an interest, which is probably the baseline, is empathy. When something painful happened, to be able to be empathic about it. Oh, you know, the math test was hard. Wow, that must feel really hard, and that must have been so challenging for you. And to be supportive. This math test was hard, but maybe the next one will be a little bit easier. It's okay. The empathy and the support really go a long way. And that also creates trust and safety so that when they say things that are hard or painful, they know someone at the other end is listening and it'll be a soft, gentle place to share that information.
And too often, we get tied up into our children's accomplishments or what we expect from them. And instead of being able to be supportive and empathic, we get angry. And that doesn't serve the relationship well. We don't want to be fighting with our kids. We have to remember that our job is to help them accomplish these goals. If we're going to get angry because they messed up on the math test, it's not going to help them. It's going to make them more nervous next time and more tense next time about what is Dad going to say about how I did.
Well, what you're creating in that situation is a situation of fear as opposed to safety. Very, very different, you know, connection in the relationship.
And we have to remember that each child has different strengths and different weaknesses. And we can't necessarily expect from one child what we expect from the other. So that it's reasonable to say, look, you're a really smart kid. When you study, you get a 90, and you got a 73 because you were out playing ball and you never got to study and you forgot about the test. You can't let that happen again. You need to be more responsible. But it's not fair to get angry at a kid who might be trying his best but has other challenges. You wouldn't yell at your kid who's got a learning disability because they did poorly on a reading test when they're really disabled and they can't read. Much like I wouldn't yell at a kid for losing the race if he was crippled. So we have to appreciate each kid, each of our children, and see them as individuals. And some children are more challenging than others. I deal in my practice with a lot of hyperactive kids, a lot of kids who have real behavior challenges. We do parent training for behaviorally disordered kids and kids with behavioral challenges. Parents can't wait to come in and find out how they're going to punish the kid to make them behave. Mm-hmm. And what we do the first three sessions is all about relationship building, is spending special time with your kid. Because you are the most important person in your child's life. And I was just talking to a behavioral consultant who's working with a child with some real learning disabilities and some hyperactivity. And he's, you know, trying to shape the behavior simply by giving a lot of positive feedback for the behaviors we want to increase. And one of the first things we teach parents is catch your child being good. It is so easy to catch a child being bad because when your son hits one of his siblings, they scream. When he knocks down their toy, they get angry. And so you hear about it right away. When they play nicely together, things are quiet and you say, let me not disturb. But that's when you need to be most involved. And that's when you have to be saying, I'm so impressed how nicely you're playing. You kids are getting along so well. I'm so proud of both of you. It gives me such nachas to see my children playing together nicely and, you know, being nice to each other. That is the greatest reward a child can get, because all children want is our attention and our respect, our approval. And we can use that really to shape their behavior so that noticing your child, acknowledging them, letting them know that they're important to you and you appreciate what they do can be very powerful in shaping their behavior and in developing your relationship with them, so that we can work on changing behaviors while developing the relationship at the same time.
Absolutely. I think one of the other things that I want to address in terms of relationship building is really continuing to create rituals at home. For instance, bedtime ritual. Bedtime is a wonderful opportunity to connect warmly, snugly with children, and them having that routine of what bedtime is. We put on our pajamas, we brush our teeth, or we take a shower, and then there's a bedtime story, and then maybe there's some talking, and maybe it's not just reading a story, maybe it's creating a story together, is absolutely wonderful. More and more opportunities to connect and more opportunities to spend good time together, because a lot of the time, unfortunately, that we have to spend with our children is commanding them to do things. Do your homework, eat your dinner, put your shoes away. Did you pack your knapsack? Did you pack your snack? So we have to create opportunities where it's not just about us commanding them or telling them what they have to do, but being able to connect with them in a very soft, special way that is chronically building the relationship and the connection that's warm.
One thing I want to point out is when you talk about creating a story together, if you really want to understand your child, making up a story together is going to show you so much of where they're at. It's going to show you some of what their fears are. Everything comes out in their play and in their fantasy. And when you allow them to be creative, it's like a Rorschach. It opens them up, and you really can get a real insight into what's going on inside their heads. And so there's a lot of opportunity in the 5 or 10 minutes in bed at night, in the 15 to 20 minutes at the dinner table.
And again, it doesn't take a lot of time. Like, that bedtime ritual can be compact. It could be, you only have 10 minutes, it could be all of 10 minutes. But as long as those 10 minutes are focused and goal-oriented, and that you're present and that you're not running to answer a telephone call or to return an email, but that you're both really there together, acting together, doing together, being together, that's important.
I think that one of the most destructive things that happens in families is when children feel they're not loved enough, or they feel that my brother, my sister is loved more. I think that there's a natural amount of sibling rivalry. But I think when everybody is getting what they need, they're not fighting with each other, they're not angry with each other, they can be loving to each other.
You know, the truth is the story time or the bedtime ritual can be done as a group. If there are children within the same age range, it can be done together. But then there's those 2 or 3 minutes, you know, when you're spending with that individual child before they're going to sleep.
I think that as long as each child is getting what they need, and you really need to monitor that, because it's not the same for each child. For some children, you know, you sit and talk to them and they want to talk and tell you everything and tell you all that they're so in touch with those feelings and this happened, this girl said this and this girl said that and it made me so upset and I don't say how she could do this. And then your other child just wants, you know, a hug and a kiss and tell you, this happened today. It takes about half a minute and they're done. Not every child needs the same things, but it's important that we recognize what our children's emotional needs are, and that we make an effort to be there, to be very present, and they will allow us to meet their needs.
Right. Also to remind them that you are spending that special time with them, just in case they start taking it for granted. Sometimes children need to be reminded, oh, this is mommy's special time with Tali. This is the time of day, you know, these very special minutes before you go to sleep where mommy just wants to be with you. So that it's underscored. Not that you win more points, but that it's underscored and that they know that you know that this is what this time is about.
Right. I mean, quite honestly, one of the rewards that I often use with kids is dad will take you to pizza on Sunday, just you and dad, or we'll, you know, spend a half an hour playing ball together or going to arcade or whatever it is, just a special time. Because what's more important to kids than things is you. And the more you can interact, and we have very limited time, we live very hectic lives today. We often don't have a lot of time. And so the time becomes that we do spend is very important. And then just to go back on where we always come from is that I think one of the important things in developing a relationship with your child is your relationship with your spouse. If you model a loving, caring relationship, if they see that between their parents, they will emulate that. They will want to have that same type of relationship. And so that you're helping them with their relationship with you, with each other, and with their future spouses. Now, for some reason, people think it's okay to yell and scream in front of their children, but it's not okay to say, I love you, in front of their children.
Or to show any kinds of affection.
And it's important that to the level that is, you know, that you're comfortable, that the kids know that you show affection to them, and that you could show, you know, you say it to each other, so that they can recognize that there is a lot of love, and that people do care.
And that's probably the best inoculation that children can have from anything, any challenges that are going to cross their paths this year, next year, or in future years to come, because they feel that they come from a very secure place where people really take them in, respect them, parents respect each other. It's probably the best inoculation, the most important inoculation that they'll ever receive.
So I guess in terms of the relationship and developing the connection, it's really a matter of trying to meet your child where they're at, spending the time and making it quality time, really being present, trying to really interact with them.
And when you're interacting with them, validating them and acknowledging them.
Right. And catching them being good, complimenting them, noticing them and their what they're doing that you value and that's important to you. And that's just interacting nicely. That's important, too. I think sometimes we get lost in this maze of school that kids are in for so many years, and that always puts the emphasis on academics. And I remind people that our major goal as parents is to make sure our child grows up to be a mensch, that our child knows how to get along with other people. Everything they learn in school is secondary to that, because kids who grow up feeling good and knowing how to talk to people and to get along with people, liking themselves and able to interact, are happier adults who are more successful adults. And how well you did in school doesn't correlate nearly as well to success in life.
Right. Well, listening to them in this way will implant the seed that they are special.
So just to review again, spend the time, make special time out of ordinary things like errands, preparing dinner, create rituals over things like dinner time or bedtime, and really modeling the appropriate relationship for your children so that they will know how to really have a connection with you, with their siblings, with their friends, with their future spouses. And when they grow up, they'll know how to be parents as well.
Because it's really all about the relationship.
Dummy. Thank you for joining us today on Parent is a Verb. This is Barry Holzer and Connie Holzer saying goodbye. If you have any questions or comments, please email them to parentisaverb, all one word, parentisaverb@ou.org. Thank you and have a good day.